Welcome to the Cultivating Change podcast with Tish Fielden. Throughout the series, we're going to be decoding behaviour to move children and teachers from surviving to thriving. I'm Tish, a former teacher, psychotherapist, author, and co-founder of the education charity Jamie's Farm. Throughout my life, I've been lucky enough to see firsthand the incredible ability of all young people to reroute themselves and find more positive pathways when they're given a chance. I'm now passionate about cultivating change for children and supporting the adults who care for them and enabling both to thrive. Throughout this series of podcasts, I'm going to speak to teachers, young people and experts, having conversations about what underpins challenging behaviour and also how we can use a positive strengths-based approach to ensure that the young people and those who care for them can become the best versions of themselves. Today, I've got the pleasure of talking with Glenn and listening to his version of what it's like being in an inner city school. He's been there for 15 years, growing up and living in London, and his reflections on what it's like and what the challenges are that are presented for young people today. Let's make a start together, because that'd be interesting. You know, nobody wants to be unpopular. And nobody wants to, so you're talking about children at school now where you work. Yeah. And I suppose the thing I'm really interested in is this quality of childhood today, whether it's distinctly different from, say, when you grew up, and whether the expectations which you're talking about are different.
From my experience to what I hear when I speak to students, I think the quality, whilst it gives the impression it's better, is not, it's far less. And why I say that is, younger, we'd always have dinner around the table as a family. You know, you'd know that you need to be in the house at a particular time for everyone to eat. Okay. Now, kids, parents are working so many different hours or in inconvenient hours that they're not there. So they'll probably just leave something in the fridge, or to give some kids some money, they go down to the locals, well, they'll only end up in a local chip shop or chicken shop or something like that, and just buy foods there, meet up with their friends. So there's no bonding time. As a family, I don't see the bonding time. I know, because I'm in the area where I came up in West London, I see it in evenings. I walk around, you see the kids just in a group, and they just walk around with a box of food, and they're just eating and walking. And even then, they're not even conversing. There's no conversation. There's no.
They're not conversing with each other.
Not even with each other. They just sat there. So even communication has deteriorated. And in schools, you can see it. The kids are sat together and you leave them. There's not much to say. They just seem to be quiet.
Interesting. Yeah. My impression of children coming here over 15 years to Jamie's Farm is that they do lack those basic social skills, which, as you say, are communication, conversation, which is connection. And actually, as you say, if they're not getting it when they're at home, and that can start very young. I mean, when you talk about those children, the parents being out at work because they have to be to keep a roof over their heads, you wonder how young it is that children have started to miss those building blocks of conversation, community, sitting together, sharing, having a feeling of security in a family, which is ultimately what family can give, that sense of safety and being a collective.
I mean, I've seen students as young as 9 and 10, 8 on the road. So when I say children, young children, I'm not talking your 13, 14 years. I'm talking single digits, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. Even to point past, I've seen some of them. What are you doing out here at this time of night? And this, I remember once, 11 o'clock at night, saw a young boy, and he was with his friends, and they were talking to me, because some of them I knew from the local school and from the area. And then I noticed him, and I was like, why are you out at night? Aren't your parents looking for you? You know, I laughed it off, because I thought maybe he was a younger brother of one of the children there. And I only realised his age when it was a few years later he joined the local school I worked at, was secondary. So I was like, hold a minute, so you must have been really young when I used to see you hanging around on the roads, if you're only now coming in as an 11-year-old, and this was 2-3 years later.
So that lack of supervision as well. How else do you... You're saying it affects the way that they don't almost know how to talk to each other, let alone to maybe to adults. Do you, what other differences do you see in children then?
Well, for example, if at my time, for example, we were a group of... We sat around, we would probably sit... I would say we wouldn't be sitting around for more than about 15, 20 minutes. And someone would go, oh, come, we need to do something. And we'd start sort of discussing what we're going to do. We'll jump on the bike... And we'd cycle down to the park, which or not the local park, but a further park, a few miles away. We'd make a day of cycling out, you know, just having fun, playing around. Sometimes we'd just bring shorts and go and jump in the local river, things like this. Whereas kids now won't leave their postcode.
And so, why is that?
Fear, well, like, this is to do with the, I'd say, the violence and the things that go on in different postcodes. Because nowadays... It happened in my time, because I remember travelling to South London, and we're about 16, 17, and we walk along, and I remember these group boys walk past and said, oi, what area are you from? And they were in a car, so they were much older than us, because they were driving. And we're like, uh-oh. And I remember one friend, we better get out quick, and we just took off and ran, because we knew the moment they questioned us, they knew we weren't from there, because... They wouldn't have queried it if they didn't. So we ran off. So it's always happened. So you're talking 30 or 40 years ago. So it's always happened.
As, and that postcode thing, I mean, I guess historically there have always been a sense of tribes and area and sort of possession, if you like. Do you see it as a natural extension of that, or do you think it's got something else that is motivating
It's a bit of both. It is a natural extension that where people are becoming more and more into the area. And as the fear of leaving it grows, which has grown a lot over the years, it's got to the point they become more protected, more tribal within the area they are. Because the more they can't travel, the more...
The more that you have to look inwards, don't you?
And then the siege mentality starts to kick in then, because it's like, oh, we can't leave it because everyone's against us. So they get tied together. But so, with no communication.
So that's a really sad narrative for a child to grow up feeling they can't go out as you did and maybe jump on your bikes and go and have an adventure. You can't go and create your own fun and, you know, sometimes there's a lot of low-level mischief, but it was it was challenge, wasn't it? It was adventure and experimenting with discovering more about life. And if you're... If they're not communicating to even plot and plan and dream and do, then what are they doing with their time?
Good question. They play games. They play games.
On their phones.
On the phone. And nowadays, if you see a group of kids together, they literally, and I've watched them, during COVID was when it was really, really clear. Well, it was clear on one side, and then I saw something interesting, which I'll come to in a moment. And the first part was clear was they would sit in a group, and they'd be on the phone and see someone, like, tap on the phone. Then they'd turn to the person next to them. They wouldn't even speak, and they'd show them something in the phone. And I used to joke, oh, look at that. They can't even speak to each other. They've got to use the phone to communicate. And they'd show them something, and they'd and laugh, and then they'd just go back to their phone. So they'd sit in a group, but not actually speak.
I'm really resonate with that. I remember being so shocked when I was even cycling in Italy and sitting in a sort of cafe one evening, group of teenage girls coming in, and I thought it was some celebration, and they sat on their phones all evening and only, as you say, showed the phones to each other, something to have a shared laugh, but no conversation. And that... And also adults doing that. So it feels, I don't know what your thoughts are, but it feels to me like the phone has usurped conversation and
it's
connection.
It's taken over everything. And in a way, there was one benefit of COVID was, and this was towards the late, say, the middle of it, when we were coming back into schools, kids that were walking around started to do things like get stones, and they started to play games with stones. They started to kick the stones around. They started to do different things. And I actually said, look, the moment the communication thing's gone, everything's gone, people are reverting back to humans. Because they started to make games up with sticks, with stones, things that we did as a kid. And it was so good to see them suddenly running around and laughing, joking. No phones, no electronics, and even some sitting and talking.
Yeah.
You know, we've got students here on this group that I hadn't actually heard their voice properly.
Really?
Apart from just hello, yeah.
Although you've until been they in were school here. With them.
I've been in school with them. And I had actually said to some of the other members of staff, if some of these kids spoke from behind a wall, I would not know who it was.
Gosh.
Because I've not heard their voices. The most I've got is when I say hello, they'd say hello, or some of them would just nod their heads, mm. didn't they? And in 1 week, or 4 days, basically, with no phone, no anything, they don't stop talking.
I've heard them singing.
Yeah, they don't stop talking. They're singing. I found out one of the girls got a beautiful voice. They can sing. They're active. It's only taken a week.
Yeah. 4 days.
Four days, basically, so that we can see this is what kids are really like. They're happier.
Yeah.
So when they're on their phone, they say they're happy, but their facial expression, their body tone says otherwise.
Yeah.
Now, no one's asked for their phone. No one's queried it. They're just playing around. And their body language looks different. They walk out faster. I get up in the morning, by 6 o'clock, some of them are already up at six.
Enthusiastic.
Yeah, they're up, ready to go.
And I guess they've also slept, which is something that a lot of them don't do.
They don't. A lot of them say they stay up on their phones. I've speak to the parents, say, look, take the phones off them or get them to put a set time on the phone.
Mm.
After an X amount of time, whatever, if they go to bed at nine, then the phone's gone for mates and so on. So at least an hour and a half before they go to bed, lose the phone, lose contact. Turn it off. Don't put it on silent. Don't just leave it there. Because when you get up to go to the toilet or if you just roll around, you open your eyes, you're tempted to think, I wonder if anyone's messaged me or if there's something going on. And also with the media, they've created this, you need to know what's going on all the time. You need to know what's going on all the time. So it's a marketing thing. The more you make them work the phones, the more you can sell great phones that says, oh, we can give you this, we can give you that. Social media. So it's, you're making money whilst destroying children.
It's a terrible
or
thing.
Or people, because adults are bad, just as bad.
Yeah, but the children rely on us as adults to create the safety and the boundaries, and we're not doing that. We're allowing their childhood to be stolen from them.
Yeah, and a lot of adults are happy if their kids are playing around. Specifically, you go in the park sometimes, you see kids running around and you think, great, and you look across at the parents and they're sat on their phone, so they're not even aware of what the kids are doing in front of them. They're on their phone. So the kids think, oh, well, as I get older, I can be on my phone, because they're seeing it as
being modelled.
As being modelled as that's what you do as you get older. So the first thing they want is a phone, and a 10-year-old, 9-year-old wants a phone because they want to act like a grown-up.
Yeah, well, we are the role models. But I think the sad thing about that too is that the conversation as a parent you might have with the child, like you were great on the swings, or I saw you be kind and help that little boy get up on the swings, or it was lovely seeing you run so fast, or whatever. Those conversations aren't happening, because if a parent's on the phone, they're not even watching their children. And one of the things that I don't know if you say these children in 4 days have changed, but I think one of the things I notice here at Jamie's Farm is just the opportunities they get for positive feedback from each other.
That is the big thing. That is a big one, because some of them, I could tell by the way they responded to some positive, they don't get it often.
Yeah.
Because when someone said, oh, well, I want to shout out to so-and-so for being really helpful and showing some care, they literally look around surprised, like, who, me?
Mm.
You know, they're not used to it, or they almost, like, want to shy away from the respect. I mean, now they're standing and they've got big smiles on their face, they're all getting praises.
Mm. They want
it
to.
It seems unusual. Yeah.
And at school, do you think they're getting enough of this positive feedback at school?
Capital no. Not at all. Yeah. I mean, the school that I work at does put an emphasis on trying to give positive feedback, you know, send positive emails. So they're always doing it, but it doesn't actually happen.
So it's not... What I'm noticing is we're talking about a relational sense of feedback, aren't we? Those moments that happen just because they happened in the moment. And if it's formalised, I don't know, it has the same effect. So, like you're saying... you know, I wonder how children are feeling about school. if you're saying you wouldn't know the voices of some of these children, it's like they're not really showing up.
Well, they're not. The body turns up, but the child hasn't. Mm. You know, the child's wherever it is, on holiday, at home, at the beach, you know, physical body. And you can see it because their learning suffers. Because if they're not there, they're not taking anything else. They can hear you and they can follow the basic instructions, but they're not paying attention, not taking it in. Mm. So you need to bring that bit where I think teachers should be, I think there should be more smiles on teachers' faces.
Yeah.
I don't agree you say to them, you must smile, because that also doesn't work.
No.
But try and, as the adults, let's try and create an episode where we can smile, where we can laugh.
Where we can be pleased to see them.
Yeah, be happy to see the kids. Mm. Be soft if they make a mistake, you know?
Yeah.
I've pulled kids up before and they do something wrong and I call them over and say, right, okay, you do know I saw that, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, then I'll say, if that was seen by another teacher somewhere, what do you think would have happened? And at 9 times out of 10, they can tell you exactly what the process would be. Because it's drilled into them. I went, right, okay. So that means, well, I'm not going to see it again, doesn't it? And like, yeah, sorry, sir, sorry, sir. And I let them go. So I won't necessarily, like, if it's bad, obviously I'll pick it up. But I always give them that chance to know, right, if I see you again, I now know you do know you shouldn't be doing that and you do know the consequence.
Mm.
Now I can take an action. But you know that I will let you off the first time or I'll give you a chance. And I try and give as many chances as possible. Because... And I've said this to other teachers, when you pick up a child for doing something, tell yourself, what were you like as a child? You played around. All children play. When are they going to play if you don't allow it?
I agree. Play is how we learn often. It's also that extension of vitality, imagination in a child, isn't it? And when you say the child's body turns up, but the child doesn't, that makes me so sad because... When you look at the number of questions very young children ask, they question all the time. They're curious, aren't they?
Mm.
And then someone did some research that showed by the time they're teenagers, they hardly ask any questions. Where's that curiosity gone? But also, you use that word drilled.
It's suppressed. It's suppressed. Kids aren't given the opportunity, from what I see, to be inquisitive and ask lots of questions. And I wouldn't say it's the fault of teachers because their schedules and their work is so heavy and so tight. They feel they haven't got the time to stop and talk to kids and be just generally asked because it's like they finish the lesson, all right, I need to go back and set up for my next lesson, I need to do some marking, you know. So they any little time they've got, they see that their free time and they feel you're encroaching onto my time. So they'll try and move away. And that is enough problem. You tell them, well, no, you come in at a set time, work till set time. Make it easier, because the better the relationship you have with that student, the less of all the other problems you have around it will happen. So the behavior things will start to dissipate, which means you then get more time to put more into a lesson, which gives you more time to do more things in your free time. You know,
and you get more of that feedback loop as an adult, a feeling that what you turning up to do, which is to teach and help children learn and to learn in the widest sense. For me, it's about their development. You would get more of that. And do you think that children's behaviour, there's a lot in the press about children are behaving, their behaviour's worse in school. Do you think that's true?
Or I personally do not.
Mm.
Okay. I've been working within the education industry now 15 years. And what I see for the students I dealt with in the past, the ones now, the ones in the past were far, far worse. More respect, that's different, more respect. What it feels to me and what I see is that the threshold in where behaviour is marked has come down. So a student can go over that threshold and be in trouble far easier. In the past, a student would have to run out of a class, throw something across the classroom, kick over a chair, you know, annoy someone, start making noise, trying to go on their phone lesson. These sort of things that would get them out of a lesson. Now, turning around, looking, not paying enough attention to a teacher, not following a teacher around the room while they're talking, dropping a pencil and getting up to pick it up without permission. These are the things that put students out of lessons now.
What, very, very different. Detentions or?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they'll have a detention. So they get put a lesson and then they'll have a 45 minutes, an hour detention after school.
And in a child's mind, I can't help imagining that they feel some resentment about that and
a lot.
Injustice.
A lot. I do. A lot of kids come to me. I get a lot from different year groups. Yeah. Will speak to me, and when they really feel it, they sat in a detention. You have two people in for an hour. One has been play fighting and throwing things around the class, talking, laughing. Mm. He's got an hour. Mm. Another one sat there because they turned around a couple of times and then got up to throw something into the bin without permission. But they've both got the same punishment, and then they feel resentful. They're thinking, well, he did all that, and all I did, and that's all I get. But all I did, I just got to get my pencil, and they uncalled me.
Yeah, it. I feel that children need to feel they're succeeding, not failing.
Yeah.
And in a sense, when you talk about the threshold changing, they can fail so early on that I imagine for some of them it's very hard to turn up. And what we're also hearing is this massive amount of truancy, like children not... absenteeism, not coming to school,
that is,
but even within school, avoiding class. But actually, if the class isn't something that you feel that you'll get support, that there'll be a place you want to learn, that the learning has relevance to you, that you get to kind of be engaged, I really get why children choose not to, especially if they've reached a threshold where the amount of punishment has sort of blunted their sensitivity to it, as if it doesn't make sense.
And the fact that if you get in trouble, even though you're going to put your side of the story, a lot of them feel that sometimes it's not listened to.
Yeah.
And that can be the case, because obviously you can't turn around and say, well, no, that teacher's wrong, criticise the teacher, it's not good work ethic. But then at the same time, you're sitting there thinking, but I understand what this where this child is coming from.
Yeah.
And depending on your relationship with the teachers, how do you get around that?
Well, you know, what we were hoping to do from our work with Jamie's Farm and Cultivating Change is to support those teachers to be curious about behaviour, because behaviour is a communication, isn't it? And so often it's coming from the children. Where we started today is talking about children who haven't had the developmental building blocks put in place at home to support them to understand social norms, to understand what you started with, politeness, you know, that how you talk to people, how you communicate. If all of that is missing, then those same children, through no fault of their own, can become the children who get into a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of time when they get in these trouble, it's not, well, not a lot of time, there's times when it's not an intentional thing. How you speak, you know, like a lot of the young kids in central London, if you point out something they did wrong, their street phrase is, oh, my bad.
Yeah.
They get in trouble. But I've gone to a few to explain, listen, they're not being rude.
No.
That's how they say, sorry, it's my fault. They just go, my bad. That means, my bad means my fault.
I have my grandchildren say that. Yeah. It is
and
their apology.
It's important to listen to that. So they're not doing it wrong, because when they come and look at the reason for the on-call, why they brought in, someone will go, yeah, and then, like, speaking appropriately. And they're not corrected by the teacher. They're just thrown out lessons. So when I speak to them, I say, he goes, well, I don't know. I didn't do anything. And he goes, so I will go for a process of going, right, okay. So when you got your first warning, what happened? Mm. And I literally go step by step.
Yeah.
They don't always get it right the first time because they miss bits. But as you keep going it, they start filling in the gaps. Then they go, then you're saying, I know it was my fault. I told him it was my bad. And then I went, what did you actually say? And he went, well, I told him it was my bad. I went, did you actually say that? And yeah, and I went, ah.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand what that means, or she doesn't understand what it means. That's why they think you're just being
cheeky.
Right? So the thing. And I've witnessed where someone's gone, oh, sorry, my bad. And they go, no, it's your fault. And I went, that's what they just said.
Yeah.
So it's that thing, and there is a friend, and again, I think it's the pressure some teachers are under. They don't have the time to understand how young people are speaking, because by the time you start understanding it, it will change.
And in 15 years, you've seen a lot of change in terms of what pressurises teachers.
Yes.
I think back to 40 years ago teaching, and actually your task was to inspire children and to make them to enable them to enjoy learning. Mm. Whereas now it seems that it's been so reduced to measurement of performance against certain criteria.
Totally.
And teachers themselves feeling measured against these criteria. So some of that joy and that sense of individuality has gone. But I wonder what you've seen change in 50 years.
Even in 50 years, it seems to be like, obviously I can't say for 40 years ago, but in 15, 20 years, because even before I was in school, you could see the tip of things. What you've got is, I find that respect for grown-ups, i.e. being spoken to a grown-up and stop it. And like in my time, any grown-up, so if I was a kid run across and you stopped me, my automatic instinct would be, oh, sorry, miss, sorry. Yeah. Like that, even in the road, be like, sorry, and then go quiet, keep my mouth shut, and keep walking.
Yeah.
That was what you did. You didn't answer back to an older person. Mm. You just, any older person road. And if I got home and my mom or dad found out that I was disrespectful to an older person, they'd be upset with me.
Yeah.
Okay? It's like, know
See, there
your
was
place.
A it was a respect, and it was taught through the family, that respect.
Yeah, that you respected your elders. Yeah. You know, like someone didn't say it, but just the way everyone behaved, you realised, really. And then when you saw your parents meet your grandparents, or an uncle, someone who's thing, and you saw how they went from telling you what to do to suddenly listening and talking, you think, all right, that's what I've got to do. And you model that pattern. Now, I've seen kids in shops go to pick up a piece of chocolate, and the parents say, put that back, and scream at them and shout, and then the kid shouts back, and Raman's going, like, stop.
Yeah.
I've seen parents, it could be carers, getting into a verbal altercation with their child in the middle of a supermarket. You know, once I saw it, and the mother, I'm going to say mother, it got into a slangy match, like swearing. Okay? And at one point he used the word mom, so it was his mom. But and I just literally was looking, thinking, wow. I wouldn't even let the tone of my voice go up to my mom, even as an adult.
Because but you just don't do that. If you're shouted at as a child, if the adults role model those kinds of behaviours, and part of me is thinking,
it becomes normal.
It's normal, but also I'm thinking of the pressures on some of those parents and those single mothers who themselves haven't had that support, and equally who are under so much financial pressure and anxiety about so many things that they're spilling over. It's like they can't contain their own difficulties, and therefore the child's absorbing them. And it feels to me that the lack of community, you mentioned uncles and people like that, you know, I'm thinking how previously children grew up with a respect for not just their parents, but the adults in their community who they recognised as these key role models. And I'm really sad.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. It's broken. Some of them have them there. I.e. there is that network, but the network isn't accessed.
Yeah.
So although the network is available, they're either too busy or they're not interested. They've got their own things to do. So it does go. Whereas in the past, your parents would make a point. You would know every cousin, every aunt, every close friend of your parents. You would know where they lived and where they were.
Yeah.
Now, kids don't.
Well,
you know, they'll find that.
It takes me right back to, you know, where we were talking about the digital world. Because what I wonder is if that is literally being used to babysit children rather than nourish them. So I've seen babies being handed phones to quieten them, you know, 2-year-olds shoved in front of a phone rather than a conversation. And it seems to me that when, you know, you really put your finger on it, when you talked about these children are coming to school who can't talk, they're not used to communication where you look to the adults and the adults give you that positive feedback loop. And it's not rocket science. And it feels so sad to me because some of the ingredients of what you've seen, you've been to Jamie's farm three times, I think, is that?
Four times.
Yeah. And so what would you describe as those things that we could transfer from here to schools or to homes that would just help children.
So simple. The sitting around a table in the morning,
yeah,
doesn't matter whether it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes, sitting around the table, that's what's eating together. Ask, and then the most important one, which is done every morning here, how do you feel today? Such a simple question, but it gets so much. How do you feel today? That kid can go, oh, you know what, I didn't really want to go to school today. Well, why not? And then they will tell you, because they can feel you're listening, they will tell you. Okay, maybe not the first time and you'll hear it roundabout, but eventually they'll realise you're genuinely asking. You think, I remember speaking to some parents and they say, oh, I think, and my advice was, look, when they come in the evening, ask them how their day was. I mean, like, you won't listen. I went, no, you probably won't. You won't listen today. You might not listen to next week, next month. I goes, in one day, 1 month, you're going to say, oh, how was your day? And you'll say, all right.
Yeah.
You know? And I went, and you'll be surprised at how big that all right will feel to you when he does it. Because that means that he's acknowledged you. And because it takes time for them to get used to it. I went, you're building something that they should learn between the ages of 0 and 5.
Yes. And as you say here around the table, because they all do it, they do a check-in, they give a number, how are you today? They feel listened to by not just the adults, but by their peers.
Yeah.
And they're and willing to show up.
As well.
And they're what?
Non-judgmental as well.
Yeah, and it's not, you. And no one's saying you have to feel this or that. It's just like, okay, how can we support you? So if they're not feeling great, there's that sense of, well, I'm sad to hear that and we'd like to support you. And children often can't say exactly what's going wrong for them. But the fact that someone's saying, we care, we've acknowledged you're not feeling great, you need some support to get through the day, is very different from them feeling, as you said, that sort of lack of communication where they might go into a classroom and because they're not feeling great, they might break unintentionally one of the rules and get admonished for that, get a detention, and actually it makes them feel the world is an even worse place than it was before. And I think what we're talking about today is how to bring some joy back. And what I mean, you see them sitting around the table, you see them sharing, and you talked earlier about the children chatting, you know, I heard them singing. And I guess there's something about allowing some play as well.
You've got to allow play. I mean, now in school, a lot of schools even control the children's behaviour in their break. So they're not allowed to run around. They say, oh, don't, they'll fall over. And I went, yes, and they'll get up. It's a normal learning curve. Okay? If they fall now, they're going to graze their knee, probably tear their uniform. Yes, that's not nice. Probably do something like that. If they fall older with no experience of falling, they could break something or seriously hurt themselves, you know. So you've got to have to learn to go, little kids, why do they know not to touch something hot? Because they've probably done it at some point as little kids.
Okay?
Why not to leave your hand in a doorway when it's been closed? Because they probably did that at some point as a little kid. Why don't you run too fast? Because they've done that at some point as a little kid. And they've learnt what we'll call the hard way, but the easy way. The hard way in that it hurt, the easy way in that it was young enough to just be a knock at somebody there to brush you down, make sure you're okay. You know. And whilst we're talking to ease things, it's just a case of give them that free time. If you let kids come in and they've got to be completely quiet all day long, what you have is a school with 12, 15, 700, depends on your school, of steam kettles boiling, waiting to just go at some point. And they won't all go at the same time, so what you'll have days where just going off one after the other and you're running around, technically turning the heating off under each of those kettles. End of the day, you're sitting there exhausted because you didn't allow them to let the steam off at some point. Didn't they? Anything, even if you've got pressure cook on, doesn't matter how long it's going, at some point it goes poof and it will let that pressure out and then it'll return to normal again. You know, and that's what we need to do to kids. And their pressure group break and lunch, that's when they should be able to let it all out. And then hopefully...
Letting us steam, I so agree with you. And I have this image of that energy that's so great in kids often. And I have been in schools where they're bubbling in the corridors with chat and jokes and laughter. And you see them running in the playground. And then I've walked into other schools where They walk in lines. They're not allowed to talk to each other between lessons. And as you say, that feels like putting a lid on a boiling pan.
We did have that. We're a lot more relaxed where we are now, so they can talk going to class. In the past, it had to be complete silence up and down the stairs. But obviously, when that showed, it didn't work well.
There's learning through doing.
But they've learned, they've learned that, and they've adjusted that. The only time they've got to keep quiet is in the mornings when they picked up and brought up. But we've now said, well, if they're murmuring, it's fine. And if it reaches disturbance level, which is understandable, if you're disrupting others and you've got to walk through a corridor, another class may already be in the room and started to learn. So, yes, we expect a certain level of behaviour there. But
letting off steam.
Yeah,
well, I'm going to hold that image. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
That sense that you've hung in there, you're still in education, you still give those children a listening ear. And you know what they want. And I think we have to hope that schools are going to enter a new phase, because children are saying that the formal learning, they can't see the relevance often. They can't imagine themselves beyond here. And
it doesn't relate to real life.
No, and what they need is real life. And that's not happening at home. So given they spend such a large proportion of their life, it's very hard for schools, and they're not currently enabled to do it. But let's hope that in the future, schools are enabled to help balance out what children need, and that society and adults take back some of the parenting or the governance over children around the digital world.
Yeah, we can only hope and pray, but we hope that does happen, because if it does happen, hopefully there's a light at the end
of
that
tunnel. Said, only takes 4 days for children to... That's why I love working with them. In 4 days, you see an entirely different... It's the human being that was always there, bubbles up and becomes present, rather than sitting underneath all those layers of conflict.
I believe that the kids I'm going back with are the real ones.
Yeah.
I'm going back to the rules. The ones I came were the ones that we were told, this is how you look, this is how you behave, and this is how you are. I'm going back with the real kids, and I've got to say, I am really, really happy to see the real kids I'm going back with.
Thank you, Glenn.
Okay, thank you very much.
It was great to hear you.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed, as I did today, listening to Glenn's reflections on schools and young people. And I love that optimistic note that actually the essence of a child, the positive essence of a child, is never far beneath the surface, and we mustn't ever give up on them. So next time, I've got the pleasure of talking to a younger teacher from another part of the country, and it will be really interesting hearing some of her reflections on how she manages to engage children who, after all, a lot of whom are not that keen to turn up at school. So I'll be talking to Ellie and look forward to sharing her views with you.